It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this week's cool down has given some of the beautiful spring flowers out there a little longer life, and of course there are many more flowers on the way as things start to heat up. This hour we're going to start off by talking about woodland wildflowers, and of course as we go on, you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants in your life. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Richard Geron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. And I think I've shared this a million times on the show. My favorite spring wildflower is the bluebell. And I've been out. I went up to Cedar Falls last weekend because that's where my favorite spot of bluebells is, and enjoyed a walk in the Katoski Greenbelt to see them. But they seem a little less spectacular this year. Do you have a feel for, has it been a good year for wildflowers?
Mine are doing just fine. I haven't been out in the woods, but what I've seen on campus at my place, they seem to be doing very well this year.
My bluebells are doing really well. I have been out in the woods in a couple of places, and it's like every year, you know, some things are just spectacular, and you kind of hit that right timing. So the rue anemones, I was really impressed with them last week in, or this week in the woods. So I think it just kind of depends on when you hit. And just because they may not be as beautiful this year doesn't mean they're not beautiful, or they wouldn't be as beautiful next year.
Well, let's talk about what is out there right now. What is a rue anemone?
A rue anemone is this tiny little thalictrum, and it's this tiny little white flower, and you need thousands of them to really make a show and a display. And at Pamela Woods, I took my class there this week, and there were literally thousands of them blooming. So, and it's perfect because now this cool weather has just kind of stalled everything, and so they're still blooming.
Oh, nice. Well, I'll put Pamela Woods on my list of places to hit next spring.
Yes, it's pretty nice. So other things that are blooming are things like trilliums. Those are always spectacular to see. Smaller bunches usually, but the red or the white flowering trilliums are spectacular.
And where do you usually find trilliums?
Those are usually in, they are also in the woods in smaller clumps, usually a little bit on a side of a slope. And you never, I never see, you know, thousands of them. I see little clumps of, you know, 15, 20 blooms here, and then a little bit farther, some others. And they're shorter, so sometimes they're kind of underneath some other things.
And a lot of people consider trillium to be one of the signs that it's time to look for morel mushrooms, right?
So it's usually, yeah, they're usually out at about the same time. Of course, it depends a little bit on moisture as well.
Right. But trilliums like hillsides, like morel mushrooms do, too, because they don't like to be in the swampy areas.
They don't like it too wet. And trilliums are really slow. So they're one of those wildflowers that doesn't reseed everywhere. So and they take a long time from seed to produce a flowering size plant, like 7 years. So it's a nice one to see when you see it.
You feel very fortunate.
You do feel very fortunate because they usually don't last that long either.
Well, and these are some of the very early flowers that we see. The bluebells are another one. Dutchman's breeches.
Yeah, that one's always fun because it does look like little pants on a line hanging upside down. And they're almost done here in central Iowa, but they're super fine foliage and they're little white flowers. We still catch a few here and there.
We also see spring beauties this time of year, right?
I love spring beauties. Though you'll see big collections of those. They're tiny pink flowers that are kind of striped, or white flowers that are striped pink. I don't know, Richard, those have started to finish. I'm not seeing quite as many spring beauties as I did maybe 2 weeks ago.
So after this first flush, what comes next?
Well, there's some great ones still coming. Woodland phlox are starting to bloom. Shooting star is starting to bloom. You also think about things like Jack in the Pulpits are coming, and wild columbines are coming as well. And then the May apples, they're up and they've set a flower, but they haven't opened their blooms yet either.
And tell us about May apples, because I think that they're such an unusual looking.
They are. It's this umbrella-like foliage, and it's pretty big. So it's about the size of a saucer, maybe approaching even a dinner plate. And they're very kind of a waxy green color. And then when they're old enough and they produce two leaves per stalk, then they will produce a little flower in the center that's this pure white flower with kind of a yellowish green center. And it will turn into something that looks like a green apple. So that's hence the name May apple.
Or small egg.
Yeah, or small egg. Yeah. You have to kind of look underneath the
yes,
leaves for them.
Hidden.
They're kind of hidden, but it's like finding a little treasure.
So what makes the woodland environment so friendly for these kinds of flowers? Because, you know, not a lot of other things end up growing in this environment other than trees as the year goes on.
Many of them come up very early in the spring.
Right. Well,
they
the leaves
flower
are still
and produce their seeds and then die back before the trees are fully leafed out. So they have adapted to that shady location. So they come up quick, do their thing, and then fade away.
Yeah, very opportunistic. So they're maximizing that photosynthesis and spread before the woods become that shady environment.
And then are they leaving seeds behind to come back next year?
Some of them are. Some of them are certainly. Some of them are spreading by roots or rhizomes. And then some of them don't do as well at that as others. They're also, you know, you'll see pollinators there helping pollinate them as well, because they're so early in bloom.
Now, a lot of us want to bring these flowers
mm-hmm.
home because they are so beautiful, even though they're fleeting. A lot
right.
of us would love to have these flowers in our yards, even if it's for a week or 2 weeks in the
mm-hmm.
early spring. So what kind of advice can you give to someone about creating an environment where you can grow these flowers? Because they are not like the other kinds of flowers
mm-hmm.
that you want to plant in your yard.
Yeah, they usually need a fairly good soil. So they're used to a very organic type soil, usually very well drained because they're kind of growing on hillsides. They're not growing in wet areas. And they're, like I said, underneath these deciduous shade trees. So you've got to kind of find that kind of woodland environment at home. And then purchasing plants, sometimes they're hard to find. Now is a great time to look at a local garden center to find some of these, and you can find some of these at some independent local garden centers and plant them quickly, and then baby them just a little bit until they go dormant in the summer. Some of them will go dormant in the summer, and then keep your fingers crossed that they come back next spring.
Does it matter what kind of deciduous trees you have in your yard? I, for example, have a lot of black walnut trees in my yard.
It shouldn't. Even though black walnuts do produce a juglone, a chemical that prevents certain things from growing underneath them, many of the shade-loving perennials, including these woodland wildflowers, are not affected.
Now, I've already mentioned bluebells, and I've been in my home for almost 7 years, and from the first spring we were there, we started trying to grow bluebells. They've spread a little bit. They
mm-hmm.
seem to like to spread onto the trails that
right.
we walk on through the yard. And of course, they won't spread nearly as much as we want them to. But
right.
Are they looking, well, not that they're looking, but, you know, are they going to do better if there's kind of bare ground?
And some of them will. They'll find those spots that are a little less competition, maybe a little more light. So right on that edge, wild columbine will do this as well. It'll spread to those areas you really don't want it because it's right in the middle of a path or something. They're also looking for those good, well-drained locations. So you can relocate them if they start to do that, or just kind of edit.
Or move
yeah.
your path.
And they also like good seed soil contact. So
yeah.
in the trail, they're being kind of
poked
into the ground.
Tamped down. So yeah, think about sometimes with something like wild columbine that has a tendency to reseed, I'll harvest the seed myself and then scatter it where I want it and then kind of tamp it down into the ground just a little bit. So then I say, okay, this is a better spot than maybe in the middle of my lawn.
The other thing that I try to remind myself of, because when I go to a place where wildflowers have really taken over and there's this spectacular show, which of course is what I want in
mm-hmm.
my backyard in
mm-hmm.
the spring, I try to remind myself that probably took decades for those flowers to grow to that point. So, I mean, what kind of time scale are we talking about?
Yeah, when you're planting your own woodland wildflower garden, think of it in the terms of 10 or 20 years, because some of them will take that long. I've had some trilliums in my garden for close to 10 years now, and they're just now kind of receding a little bit beyond and making that colony that I want. So some are slow, some are fast, but think about this as long-term, like planting a tree.
Are there invasive species that are a threat to these wildflowers?
Well, sure. Garlic mustard is one that's an invasive that we find in our woodlands that will outcompete because it's much more aggressive.
And the honeysuckles and buckthorns, they're shrubs and they just cover the landscape. So yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so even though those are plants that appear, or I mean the honeysuckle is there, but they tend to leaf out and flower later,
right,
they're still a threat to the things that are coming earlier in the spring.
Because they crowd them out, and honeysuckle leaves out very quickly in the spring, too. So they really kind of take over once they get established.
Do you have a success story that you can share with us, Cindy, about some of these? I mean, you were talking about wild columbine. Give us a little hope.
Yeah, give us a little hope. So you know, planting these, finding the right location, planting these, getting these from a local garden center or a friend who has some, so not raiding these from the woods. And then making sure you notice them when they come up and maybe just baby them just a little bit so that maybe garlic mustard or some of the other things are removed from the area. And once they get established, they actually do pretty well on their own.
And you mentioned not raiding the woods, which
right.
is a great piece of advice. But if there is someone that has these flowers on private property
sure.
that would allow you to take some, when is the best time to transplant?
It depends upon the actual plant species. Some are rather difficult. For example, Virginia bluebells can be difficult to transplant. You want to get them when they're small, typically, and maybe put them in pots and then put them into your garden later.
All right. So you have to really plan ahead so you actually can see them before they bloom.
It's worth it, though.
All right. Normally, we don't notice them until they have a flower.
Right.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we will take your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. It is Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start with a couple of email questions here. This one's from Zach. He says, I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for plants or landscaping that could help reduce erosion in my backyard. We have a small downhill slope that regularly erodes, particularly around the roots of a tree, and I'm looking for something to plant that would help fix the soil on that slope.
That would suggest shade to me around a tree, and I would look at possibly creeping lily turf, which is a grass-like plant. It's not grass. It spreads fairly vigorously, aggressively. It's very, very full when you have a good planting and very little care. It grows about maybe 8 inches tall, grass-like. You don't really do much of anything, but a nice ground cover for shady areas.
All right. And in getting that established, I am sure there's the danger that things could get washed away. Is there anything special that you need to do?
What I would do is buy a number of plants and then put some wood chips, shredded bark between the plants so you have a ground cover that prevents erosion.
All right. Here's a question from Jim in Marion County. I have a question about my spring snow white crabapple. It's approximately 7 to 8 years old and normally puts on a very beautiful and prolific show. This year, there were only a few flowers. Did a frost nip it, or do they occasionally take a year off?
There may be a couple of things going on there. Spring snow is a very colorful variety, very white flowers, it's very big, but it's susceptible to apple scab. An apple scab can cause heavy leaf drop. And so if you have a wet spring when apple scab is much more severe, by early summer, the tree may have lost maybe 50% of its foliage. And so in that weakened state, it may not form that many flower buds for next spring, possibly.
And speaking of frost, of course, we've had this cold spell. Most of the state hasn't seen a hard frost, and things are supposed to warm up next week. So are you're feeling optimistic about things
surviving?
Pretty good.
It's going to be a cold weekend, rainy weekend, but it's going to be above freezing for most of us. So we should be, I think, okay once we get into next week.
All right. And many of the flowering fruit trees around here in southeastern Iowa, the flowers are almost done. So hopefully we will have some fruit crops this year. Let's get to the phones. 866-780-9100. Don is on the line in Ames. Hi, Don.
Hello, Charity.
Hi.
Pardon?
Oh, I was just excited to hear from you, Don. What's your question?
Well, I have a comment. I just wanted to wish WI a happy 95th birthday, since today's the anniversary of getting the call letters and going on the air with a regular schedule, getting the license.
Well, you are a keeper of history, Don Ward. Thank you so much for sharing that. So happy anniversary to WOI Radio.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You have a wonderful day. 866-780-9100. So I guess we're celebrating our anniversary with wildflowers today.
Do we have cake?
We should have had cake. If Don was around, we'd have cake. But we'll have to work something out. Next up, Jeff is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Charity. And what I'd like to do is grow a prairie instead of lawn in Des Moines. And, you know, probably would upset a lot of people, but, you know, you don't need to mow and put chemicals on a prairie, I don't believe. And and I apologize. I don't want to put down grass, bluegrass, but, you know, I'm just, so how do I go, you know, just let things grow or take things? I noticed in Raccoon River Park that they burn off the prairie that they grew there every year or so. Does that have to happen?
All right, Jeff, yeah. You're looking for a natural alternative in your yard, which is getting to be more and more common.
Yeah, more popular.
Okay. Well, you don't have to burn. We typically do periodically in natural areas, but in urban areas, you would not have to burn. You could just go out there in late winter, early spring, and just cut it back. So you don't have to burn. As far as establishing it, you do have to destroy the existing vegetation. If that's turf grass, you can use Roundup, or you can till it. As far as the actual seeding, you can typically do that in basically kind of late spring or fall as far as the seeding.
So he could even go out this weekend, till his yard up, and plant prairie seed if he can get his hands on it that fast,
It may take a little bit of time to get that done as far as the tillage, but they could possibly do it in late spring. I would look for a seed mix. Some companies have various seed mixes. Some might have plants that are fairly short, because some prairie plants are quite tall, so they might have a mix that has shorter plants, maybe those that have more wildflowers, maybe something taller, maybe something for dry sites, maybe something for wet sites. And so they have all these various seed mixes. And then you sow your seed and hope it comes up. Now, typically when you start a prairie, it doesn't look like anything maybe the first year or two.
Right.
Because you tend to get quite a few weed seeds coming up. The prairie plants tend to be very slow growing. Initially, they're developing a good root system. So that first year, especially, that first growing season, oftentimes you have to go out there and mow it. Not with a lawnmower. You could use like a nylon string trimmer and basically cut it maybe about 8 inches round. And you're basically doing that so the weeds don't take over, because they grow so quickly, they get so big. The prairie plants typically are much shorter. So when you're doing this that first year, you're not harming the prairie plants, but you're basically kind of containing the weeds. And that you may have to do that the second year too, but then hopefully by the third year, It's on its own.
All right. So you do need to be patient. I see a lot of prairie in progress signs. So if you're doing this in a neighborhood, that's probably a good idea.
Right.
So your neighbors know that there's a plan.
Because that first year you go out there and you think, I don't see a whole lot of good plants. I see a lot of weeds. But if you did it right, they're there, but they're very small.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Jeff. And I know you're not alone in giving that a try. Stan is up next in North Liberty. Hi, Stan.
Good morning, Charity. I don't want to embarrass you, but I just want to tell you, you do an awesome job hosting the show.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I really appreciate it. My question is, I've been infested with Oriental bittersweet in my woodlands. I've been using Roundup. Well, you think that work?
I think it's safe, and it is a very good herbicide. What I would be inclined to do is cut them off, maybe a few inches above the ground, and then take
some...
Way
too many to cut.
Oh, for that. Okay. Okay.
it's a mess.
Okay. But it is the safest thing. You just have to be selective in your application.
Yes, I realize that. Yeah. And will that also work for the garlic mustard?
Oh, boy, I think you're probably going to want to pull that before it goes to seed. I think that's the best approach.
I don't know if that you have enough Roundup sometimes.
Yeah. If I take the seed heads off the plant and leave the plant, will it reproduce another set of seed heads?
Boy, I don't know. I don't know.
I wouldn't put it past it.
It's incredibly resilient.
Yeah, it is.
So that's why we try and remove the whole plant, and you get it before it's at seed. That's usually the best. And then maybe spot treat with Roundup if you see some more kind of coming up later.
All right, Stan, good luck with your project. And I haven't seen it yet. Is garlic mustard already popping up?
Oh, yeah, it's there.
Yeah, it's up and starting to bloom.
All right, and you want to pull it before it goes to seed. So now.
Absolutely, yes.
This weekend would be a great time to just visit your local woodland and pull garlic mustard, right?
Right, or this weekend or next week.
And, between rain showers.
Between rain showers.
And when you pull it, you have to take it with you, right?
Yes. Put it in a plastic bag, yeah.
Take it out. Yeah, don't leave it on a path or anything. Remove it from the area.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen pulled garlic mustard left on a path and then it re-roots and then grows kind of sideways, but it's an incredibly resilient
plant.
Goes to seed, yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Stan. Next up, we've got Rihanna in Fairfield. Hi, Rihanna.
Hi. I've got a series of quick questions. The first is, given the crazy weather we've had since February, what weather conditions do we look for in southern Iowa for last frost date, and when is it typically? The second question is, again, what kind of conditions do we look for, and when is typical time for planting things like cucumbers and melons in the warm weather crops? And the third question is, given that I can't start transplants indoors, how do I grow melons successfully outdoors in southern Iowa? And the last question is, I usually find the radish to be more of a cool weather crop. Is there a way to grow it in warmer weather? And that's my question. Thanks.
All right. So let's start with that last frost date.
Right. Typically occurs probably sometime in southern Iowa between the last one, the average, probably between, let's say, April 20th to maybe April 25th, on average. That's just the average. So as far as planting tender things like, for example, tomatoes and peppers, I would probably start planting those in early May. Okay. There's still a chance of a frost, this being Iowa, but probably sometime in early May. And as far as growing things like your vine crops, cucumbers, melons, squash, I would plant those also in early May. And as far as the watermelons, what they need basically is plenty of room because they're a vine crop. So make sure it's a nice sunny location, well-drained soil, and just let them grow.
Can you just direct seed those in the ground?
Absolutely,
outside?
Yes.
So you don't have to worry about transplant or starting them indoors and then transplanting. Just direct seed right into the garden.
And typically most people plant them in hills where they might put like maybe 4 or 5 seeds in a hill. And then if they all come up, they remove all but maybe 2 or 3. And the hills might be maybe 4 or 5 feet apart.
All right. And Mother's Day is a little late this year. Mother's Day is usually when we say we should plant all those warm weather crops so we can go a little early, maybe the weekend before.
Well, Southern Iowa a little bit earlier, Central Iowa around Mother's Day. Yeah.
All right. It's as late as it can be this year, Sunday the 14th. So, all right. And we have an email. Speaking of weather, this is from up in Jewell from Susan. She says, it's doing a rain snow thing up here in Jewell right now. Is this going to kill my perennials that have a bud but aren't bloomed out yet?
No. They're tough.
They'll be fine.
All right. let's go back to the phones. And we got all of Rihanna's questions answered. Let's go to John now in Ames. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I was wondering if anyone around the Ames area has seeds for woodland flowers. If I can just go get a mix, similar to like what you guys said about prairie plants, and I can just in an area and hope for the best.
Yeah, seeds are kind of hard to find, but you can definitely find the plants. But seeds are kind of hard to find. Locally, I'd probably go to like Holub's Greenhouse, Earl May, some of the other garden centers in the area. But seeds are kind of hard to find as far as the wildflowers.
What about like Prairie Moon Nurseries or some
right,
of
there
the
are
other
some,
mail
There
order?
Are some regional companies that specialize in native plants. For example, Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota, they have a webpage. They typically offer things like seeds and plants, so you have the option there. Another possibility is Ion Exchange in Northeast Iowa, in Harper's Ferry. So that's another option.
All right. So going online to look for the seed mixes. Mm-hmm. Of course, when you go to the nursery, there will be that can of wildflower seeds on the shelf.
Do.
How do you feel about those?
Oftentimes, they are native to the U.S., but not necessarily Iowa. So they might be native to California, Arizona, maybe Georgia, but not the Midwest. So you can plant those, and oftentimes you may have a fairly nice display that first year, but if they're not native, they don't come back, and so eventually it becomes kind of a weedy mess, usually.
All right. Probably don't buy the can.
Right.
Next up, Margaret in Iowa City. Hi, Margaret.
Yes. I wanted to ask about a plant. As a child, we called it a jack in the pulpit. We found it. I attended country school. We'd go out annually on an outing and go through a timber and see lots of the flowers you're talking about.
Right.
And I was fascinated with this jack in a pulpit as a child. And I haven't seen one since.
Oh.
Are they still around?
Absolutely.
And
you can buy plants, too. They're available
at
nurseries. Yep, you can buy them.
They're just now starting to come up, and the pulpit and jack is, you know, the leaves are up and they're about to unfurl. So
and what they like a moist to wet site. So they're a little bit different than some of the other wildflowers. I have mine near a gutter on the house, and they love it. So kind of a moist to wet site.
Oh, great, great.
And the nice thing is,
thank you. I was afraid that was just something we called it. As children.
Sure.
No, they're equally as fascinating children today.
And if you get a plant,
thank you. You guys are good.
Thanks a lot for your call, Margaret. And Richard, you were going to say what about?
Yes, if you have a plant, they flower and then they produce this cluster of berry-like fruit, which go from green to a kind of a bright orangey red. And you can take those and plant those. They typically contain like maybe two or three seeds per berry. So easy to do.
All right. And if she wants to find them in the woods, is there a particular kind of environment where they tend to thrive?
I would probably look near a stream where it's very shady, kind of moist or wet. That's what they like.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Margaret. And We'll just mention a comment here before we get to our break. This is from Marianne in Iowa City, mentioning that Project Green has their annual plant sale on May 6th and has a nice selection of healthy native wildflowers.
Nice.
And wherever you live, you should be looking for plant sales this time of year, right?
Absolutely, yes.
The next 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yes.
And they're always, always fun things to discover.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You can join the conversation. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Cindy Haynes is here. She's an Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and they are here to answer the questions you have about the plants in your life. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture. And let's go back to the phones. John is on the line in Winterset. Hi, John.
Hi, it's Big John.
What's your question, John?
April showers, green Mayflowers. I'm going to have a skid loader come out, and I have big acreage, and I'm going to plant a wildflower meadow. And in the middle of this meadow, I have a wild honeybee tree and an old walnut tree. So I guess my questions are, is how long before after I spray the Roundup can I plant the wildflower seeds, and what time of the year can I time, and will the Roundup, I'm going to try to stay away from the tree.
Right.
And will that hurt the bees any?
Well, make sure it's just strictly Roundup. There are quite a few different Roundup products. And if it's strictly Roundup, the active ingredient is glyphosate. And if you apply that, that shouldn't be a problem as far as the bees are concerned. The plants themselves should die fairly quickly. And typically you can plant within a week of applying the actual herbicide Roundup. As far as the wildlife, wildflower mix, you do need to somehow get the seed into the soil. You need good seed soil contact. So you might want to lightly work up the soil if it's not too big, and then sow the seed and then kind of lightly work it into the soil. Late spring would be a good time. Or fall would be a good time.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be fairly expensive, I think, from what I've seen, but I think it'll be worth it.
Oh, yeah. It's always worth it.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, John. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, Andrew in Ames. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey, I want to start out with, I guess, a comment about what I've seen in response to some prescribed fire in woodlands, especially kind of oaks. And seen really, really positive flower response, just amazing fecundity and helping balance out the understory vegetation, battling back a lot of mm-hmm. kind of like understory shrubs, like you mentioned, honeysuckle.
Right. Burning is definitely a method, yes.
And where it's safe to do, it can be incredibly effective.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, do you think that burning could kind of undermine the Roundup perspective in a way? Is a more holistic approach to managing a lot of these places?
Well, it kind of depends upon the situation. In an urban area, burning may not be acceptable, wise thing to do. But if you just had a few plants, then maybe Roundup would be the way to go, where you could go out there, if you had just a few plants, maybe cut them off near the ground, and then apply Roundup directly to the cut surfaces. So you're not using very much, but you're getting very good control.
Well, and there is definitely a movement afoot to find better natural controls. I mean, we've talked about that a lot on this program, and usually there is a natural option, although many times it's much more labor intensive, right?
And when you're dealing with something like buckthorn, honeysuckle, they're pretty tenacious plants. They're hard to get rid of. Some people use goats, but with something like honeysuckle, if you simply cut it back to the ground, it's going to come back from the root system. So you really have to physically destroy it somehow.
Speaking of natural controls, here's a question from Dennis. Would it work to stake a dark tarp to a lawn to kill existing plants before planting native plants? Would that be better than tillage?
Yeah, you could do that where you would go out with a heavy-duty tarp and just lay it on the surface, leave it there for maybe 4 or 5, 6 weeks. It should destroy everything.
All right. This is from Theodore. Is there a way to harvest seed from wildflowers you encounter in nature to bring them home to plant?
Typically, you can. Many of them produce some type of capsule or pod. For example, columbine does that. Bloodroot does that. Virginia bells, bluebells, they have those distinctive capsules or pods. And you simply wait until they're fully mature. And when they're fully mature, they typically turn brown. Then get them before they split open.
Mm-hmm. All right. Timing is crucial.
And, of course, you're not supposed to take plants from natural areas. How about seeds if it's a public area?
If you take a few, you'd probably be okay. Just not be a hog.
All right.
And be careful where you're stepping so
right.
that you're not destroying something else
right.
when going for that seed capsule.
All right. Carol is on the line next in Marion. Hi, Carol.
Hi. See, I have a lot of, I call it wild violets because it's a little violet flower. And in my lawn and in other areas like my hosta bed and blah, blah, blah. And I wondered what's the best way of getting rid of that?
There's two basic ways. One is digging. And they dig okay because they don't really have a deep root system like some weeds, like dandelions. Their root system is fairly shallow. In fact, at the base of the stem, you almost have a bulb-like structure. So you can physically dig them up, especially on a rainy day when the ground is moist. That works really well. Using a herbicide, they're kind of tough. And so you may have to put on two applications of a broadleaf herbicide, maybe a couple weeks apart. You could do it in the spring when they're blooming and also in the fall. And I would look for something that contains triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. That tends to be fairly effective, but you're never going to get rid of them completely if you have them. They're very well adapted to Iowa. They're native. They're always going to be there to some extent.
And I love them.
I think they're pretty,
and
too.
And some are very pretty. Yes, they are.
They're also edible, so you can work them into salads if you
want.
Oh,
they're great on a cupcake.
So there's some other ideas, Carol. Good luck. Next up, Maxine in Urbandale. Hi, Maxine.
Good morning. I have a tree on the east side of my house, and it shades my whole front yard. And under the tree, the grass is really sparse. Mm-hmm. But in one spot around the edge, there's nothing but moss grows. How do I get rid of this moss, and what do I do after I get rid of it?
Well, the thing is, moss will grow virtually anywhere. Basically, if you have a bare surface, there's nothing growing there. If it's kind of shady and damp, moss will grow there. So you see moss beneath trees, on the roofs of houses in shady areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very adept at growing in different locations. It's pretty easy to remove because it doesn't really have a root system per se. It kind of comes up like loose carpeting, so you can kind of rake it off. But if you have nothing there, it's going to come back eventually. So the key there would be to rake it off and then get some grass established. And in shady areas, you want to use the fine leaf fescues because they're shade tolerant. They do better in the shade than bluegrass does. Things like creeping red fescue, hard fescues, chewing fescues. And what I would probably do in your situation is go out probably around mid-August and rake the area. If there's any moss there, rake it off. Kind of break the soil surface, and then sow your fine leaf fescue at that time of year so that you can get the seed to come up, grow, and establish before the leaves start to fall from the tree.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Maxine. Next up, we've got Anne Marie in Iowa City. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for this great program.
Sure.
While it's fresh in my mind, I want to ask something that's a perennial problem of mine with my perennials, mostly my daffodils and also tulips, that I always have a disappointing number of blooms. You know, I look at other people's daffodils, and there's just this huge spray from each clump mm-hmm. with numerous blossoms, and I usually have like one or two. And I've done mm-hmm. a number of things to try and mitigate it over the years. Some of my daffodils were quite old, and so I thought, well, I needed to dig them up and separate them, and I did all
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also planted new ones.
Okay.
And I've planted new tulips, and every year, according to the bag, I get this organic bulb boost
right.
package of granules, and it says to apply it at the end of the blossoming season.
Mm-hmm.
So I work it into the soil faithfully every year. I scratch it into the soil, this bulb boost granules, and still, you know, I just don't have as many daffodils as I wish I did. You know, new ones, old ones, replanted ones. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I think the keys are selection as far as planting site. They do need plenty of sun.
Uh-huh.
Because once they're done blooming, that foliage will persist for 4 to 6 weeks. And during
right.
that time, that foliage is manufacturing food and then storing that in the bulb. So they do need plenty of sun, at least 6 hours of sun. That foliage
yeah.
should not be cut back until it dies back naturally. That's important.
Don't braid it or tie
right.
it up or anything.
Let it
photosynthesize.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, I do. I know mm-hmm. you're not supposed to cut it off, but I do tie them up in little clumps like my mother used to do. So I should just let it all just kind of
right.
lay out there?
Just leave it kind of sprawl. It does look a little bit maybe untidy at times.
Yeah,
but
it's unkempt.
Yeah.
But when
yeah.
you tie them up, you're reducing the leaf surface exposed to the sun. So just leave them kind of do their thing, kind of let them die back. And hopefully they'll bloom nicely for quite a few years. Now, eventually they might get so crowded
mm-hmm.
that you may have to dig them up. But that's going to be
yeah.
maybe 10 or 15 years down the road usually.
Yeah.
So
uh-huh.
Usually if they have a good site, they're very, very dependable.
Well, with tulips, though, tulips you might need to replant every couple of years. But
uh-huh.
with the daffodils, yeah, just stop tying up the foliage and see how that works for next
yeah,
year.
Yeah, I'll bet that's it.
Save you some work this
question?
Spring, too. Sure, quick question, quick.
I have two young apple trees that I planted about 4 years ago, and
okay.
And the one, the bigger one that I had in a big, big pot, I was surprised that after one season, it produced 12 beautiful, perfect apples on this small tree. And I was very surprised because I thought it was too soon. But now for these next 2 years after that, it's produced like one blossom and one apple.
Right. Basically, what it's doing is it's simply growing at this point. It needs to grow before it's going to flower and produce fruit again. Initially, it was a small plant under stress, and stress plants tend to flower and produce seed because if they die, they want to go ahead and reproduce. But once you plant them, their first aim is to grow, develop a good root system, a lot of branches, and then maybe after 4 to 5 years, then they start to bloom again.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Anne Marie. And we have a couple comments about a kind of an unusual plant. This one's from Katie in Wabik. She says, I appreciated the comments about the jack in the pulpit. I've been propagating green dragons, a relative of the jack, for a few years. I found it in my ferns along my house in Cedar Rapids and transplanted. They've come to grow large and beautiful. Are they rare in Iowa?
You don't see them very often. They're not uncommon. You do see them occasionally, but you know, jack in the pulpits are not real common either. So you find them in the kind of the same situations that you would find jack in the pulpit, and it looks like a jack in the pulpit, but jack has just gone out of the pulpit and kind of looks like he's going crazy.
So it almost looks like a magic wand, kind of.
Yes,
long,
and it's never straight, so it's usually a little bit crooked. It's a very cool plant. Like I said, you don't see it as much as you would see even Virginia bluebells or columbine, But it's a wonderful one to have.
Well, and Travis has a question about it, too. He says,
Oh, awesome.
I've seen them at effigy mounds, but I'd love to have them in my home landscape. Can you buy green dragons? Have you seen them?
I've seen them occasionally. It really takes that kind of independent, you know, local garden center. This is the one you want to look for at that kind of specialty garden center.
So start making phone calls.
And start now, because it's not going to be cheap. But, you know, having one or two of those in the garden, they do last a long time, and they are so cool.
And while we were talking about it, we also heard from Leanne, who said that green dragons are her favorite. So there's a green dragons are having a moment here today on Hort Day.
I think we need to have a green dragon club.
I guess so. All right. Next up, we've got Tim in North Liberty. Hi, Tim.
Hi there. We moved into our home last summer, and the previous owner must not have cared for the lawn at all. So last fall, we had soil quality restoration and overseeding, and I overseeded again this spring. Two things. One, is there anything I can do for weed control while I'm trying to let the grass grow? And two, in the process of fertilizing and trying to get the lawn nice again, I discovered that there is poison ivy the hard way coming over our back fence between the, like there's a farmer's buffer area, and it's creeping over into our lawn. Is there anything I can do to kill it without being harsh on any of the other, any of the wildlife or any of the other plants nearby?
Okay, as far as the lawn, I think herbicide this spring I wouldn't do. I would just keep the lawn well mowed. I would not fertilize in June, July, or August. If you want to fertilize in September, you can. And then I would try to get rid of the broadleaf herbicides in the fall, sometime between late September and early November. As far as the poison ivy, you can dig it up. The other option is to use Roundup, but again, be very selective in your application.
And be very careful with your skin.
Yes.
And do not burn it.
Yes, do not.
Do not.
even though it's dead, it's still very much a threat.
All right. Tim, good luck with that. Let's see. Next up, we've got Ben in Polk City. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I've got a question. Yeah, so the question is, I've got a bluegrass yard primarily, but I've got these shocks of very robust, what I'm believing to be tall fescue, and I don't know how I got it. I'm guessing I just had bare patches that it was opportunistic, but how can I rid myself of it without making it look like a minefield?
Okay, your options are very limited. One is to tolerate their presence and just keep it well mowed. If you simply can't stand their presence, then you're going to have to destroy them by some means. And basically, it's either digging them up or using Roundup, spot treating with Roundup.
Okay.
So,
I'm afraid of all of that.
It involves some work there, Ben. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you both get out to enjoy some of the wildflowers. Maybe not this weekend when it's cold and rainy, but that should preserve some of the blossoms, right?
It should. Yes.
They'll last longer.
All right. Cindy Haynes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.
Coming up next on Iowa Public Radio, Fresh Air Today, Jeffrey Toobin talks about the kidnapping and trial of Patty Hearst and where it fit in the culture, politics.